Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games. Chapter 52. Protocol. Jinx sat at the head of the command table, looking out over the Hextech interface displaying the holographic map and their run-up to Stillwater Prison, or rather, Stillwater Fortress, since it wasn't really a prison anymore. Everything was shown in washed-out greens and blues, including all of their forces, which were at present collected in one place. And in the corner was a timer counting down the remaining time left before they enacted their plan, not only to stop Camille Ferris from killing Seraphine and attempting to eat a god, but to end the war once and for all. The sun was dipping below the horizon, with less than 20 minutes left on the timer as Jinx silently ran over the calculus one more time. She reached out and poked the enormous mechanical mass at the center of the map, and at her touch, it moved, mimicking the destruction that was to come. According to her calculations, it should work. Of course, there was the theoretical, and then there was the practical, and whether or not it would work in the practical way was way up in the air. The one thing Jinx was sure of was that not even Camille Ferros would see this bullshit coming. A hand settled gently on her right shoulder, and Jinx looked up from the display as Lux smiled back at her. "It will work," she said firmly. "We're going to win this." Like Jinx, Lux was clad in the newest model of Victor's Hextech exosuit, and each one was tailored to its wearer. Jinx's fit snugly under the coat, and was the most sparse so as to interfere as little as possible with her natural reflexes. The armor covered her important bits, but otherwise left everything as bare as usual, only serving to enhance her reactions and put a little more oomph behind her attacks. Lux's was made for a mage, with multiple hex gems slotted into it to act as additional reservoirs of mana, with a Hextech mesh just beneath the surface armor that would amp up her self-enhancement spells. They'd stacked the deck as much as they could. Now the only thing left to do was to deal the cards and play whatever hand they ended up pulling.
Jinx
nodded, more in an effort to convince herself of that fact than anything else. Then she sighed and said,
"I don't know, Blondie, there's a lot of crap that could go wrong here. What if Narati's Greys fuck up their side of it? What if they reinforce the strike point? What if we take too much damage on the way in and can't cross the bay?"
"Trust in Victor and his machines," Lux said, taking her hand and giving it a hard squeeze. "And trust in your bombs," she added, "like you always have." Jinx laughed hollowly.
"Bombs, yeah. Never blown up anything this big before, though. Not even the dam comes close."
"If there's anyone who could do it, it's you," Lux said. Well, that much was probably true. All around her, Zonites were moving to and fro, carrying cases of weapons and boxes of explosives. Everything that would be needed to execute the operation. They were burning every last ace in the hole and stash they had left, so if this didn't work, Zon was more or less fucked. Then again, if they didn't try, it was fucked anyway, since Janna was annoying enough on her own, and Jinx had absolutely no desire to see what she was like with Camille in the pilot's seat. Standing from her chair, Jinx leaned over the display and watched the scene play out again. In a vacuum, the idea worked, but something-something plans, something-something contact with the enemy. Point was, the plan wasn't going to happen in a vacuum. It probably wasn't going to go off without a hitch. There was even a possibility it would fail altogether before they even got into the Conqueror's Bay. This was why Jinx hated relying on other people to do shit. If she wasn't the one doing it, then she couldn't be sure it'd blow up the right way, except that wasn't even an option. Not for Operation Shatternight. The timer blinked red as it crossed the 15-minute mark, and the main doors on the far end of the bridge let out a pneumatic hiss as Victor stepped out onto the deck, followed by Echo and General Narati of the Grey Legion, who was still in a wheelchair that Echo was pushing. They took their places on the leftmost side of the display table, with Echo looking over to both her and Lux and nodding. Jinx hoped that meant their side of things was done, She knew that Ziggs, Zack, and Twitch were ready. They were hanging out in the lower decks, waiting for the signal. Those three knew their part, and that's all they needed to know. Then the bridge door hissed again, and Jinx pressed her lips to a thin line as the other side stepped out. Starting with pretty boy Jace Towers, of all people, a fucking pilty counselor. Kitty Kate, with her nose still crooked from when Blondie had decked her. Vi stands for violence, stands for sister, and their bushy little Yordle. The father of progress himself, Heimerdinger. All four of them took the rightmost side of the display table, and Jace grimaced as he looked over everyone gathered around it.
"Talk about strange bedfellows," he muttered.
"We're here," Caitlin said coolly, "because this is no longer about Piltover and Son. This is about doing the right thing."
Echo crossed his arms and scowled at them. "Took you long enough." Vi didn't say a word. She just clenched her jaw and looked away, but Jinx could see the subtle nod she gave. She knew that everything happening here was thanks to Piltover, that she'd had a part in every dead trenchy, even if only by proxy. Well, she was going to have a lot more blood on her hands after tonight. Hopefully she hadn't forgotten how to stomach it. The door hissed open a third time, and Renata Glask, or at least what was left of her, stepped into the light and took the opposite side of the display from Jinx and Lux. She also looked different. She was bigger and broader, and her face was veined with pink lines of shimmer. Her arms, shoulders, back, and legs were heavy with biosynthetic muscle. Her veins pumped with mutagenic drugs, and her black pinned eyes burned with malevolent violet light. Just looking at her put Jinx's hackles up. She had less flesh than ever, with her right arm now replaced with a similar prosthetic to her left up to the elbow, its porcelain appearance belying its wicked strength. And wherever there weren't pink veins of shimmer, there were blackened gold veins of mechanical evolution. Despite her shape, Warwick might have been more human than Renata at that point.
"Apologies for my tardiness."
Beneath her mask, Renata's voice was flanged, metallic, and possessed a curious static burr to it similar to Victor's.
"You holding it together there, Glask?"
Jinx asked, and Renata turned to regard her coolly.
"I will be fine so long as we get this going,"
she replied. And Jinx wasn't sure if anyone else could hear it, but to her ears there was a strained tension of barely constrained violence. Actually, scratch that, from the way Lux tensed at her tone, she could definitely hear it.
"Sarah's gonna pitch a fit,"
Echo said as he turned to regard Renata. There was no accusation in his tone, it was just a simple statement of fact. Renata nodded without even trying to argue the point.
"So long as my wife is alive to do so, I will consider it a worthwhile sacrifice,"
she replied. "Fine, then let's dispense with the pleasantries," Lux said, leaning in beside Jinx. "We're all here for a reason. Whatever your old stake was in the war, that's gone. Today we're here to stop Camille Pharos, and until that's over, we're all allies, bosom buddies, and the best of fucking friends, is that clear?"
"Crystal,"
Victor said, his eyes fixed on Jace, who went rigid, then sighed and nodded back. "So," Vi said, finally speaking up, "what is the plan exactly? Because Stillwater is past the West Sungate. Piltover's still in control of all that, and there's no way to get there with this many people."
"On the contrary," Victor replied. "We're on our way there now."
The deck plating beneath them shuddered as Victor's immense leviathan of the gray heaved into motion, and everyone on the pilty side of things started looking around in alarm. Only Heimerdinger seemed more or less calm as he knelt down to lay his hand on the deck to better observe the semi-organic motion of the leviathan.
"Fascinating,"
Heimerdinger whispered before standing and looking up at Victor.
"Is it alive?"
"After a fashion,"
Victor replied.
"It is sentient, though not sapient. It possesses no more higher brain function than any other large domesticated beast."
"How?"
"Let us save the lecture for another day,"
Renata said over them, then turned to Jinx.
"We have an operation to execute, don't we?"
"Of course." Heimerdinger gave an apologetic nod, then turned to Jinx as well. Panic welled up in Jinx's chest. She knew the words, she knew the plan. She knew what everyone had to do, and when and where they had to do it. But what if they didn't? What if they went in on their own? What if they failed? What if? Lux leaned against her and kissed her cheek.
"You've got this, love."
Nodding, Jinx forced her thoughts back down and focused on how all the parts fit together. Leaning forward, she pointed to the holographic outline of the Leviathan, which was now in motion for real and not as a simulation, but in real time. It was heading west toward the Sun Gate, their first target.
"Okay, folks," Jinx began, pointing to the western Sun Gate. "Here's where it all starts."
Stalker Barbossa had been the controller primary for the western Sun Gate for close to 26 years, and there were more days than not lately that he felt it. He'd been a different man when he'd taken the position, with more energy in his limbs and less gray in his hair and beard. His uniform was as starched and pressed as ever, though, and he was still as proud to wear the brass and blue as he ever had been, even if times had changed the meaning of that. Time changed everything, though, everything but bullshit. In Stalker's years of service, he'd seen a lot of bullshit. Mostly it had to do with people trying to get through the gate without proper paperwork or trying to bully their way through because they were the son or daughter of some such noble high clan or what have you. None of that even approached what was happening right then.
"What the void is that? Someone give me a goddamn report!"
Stalker stared at the absolutely massive radar return that was, by all accounts, coming straight at the Sun Gate from the very depths of the gray. The tertiaries in charge of the radar were scrambling to confirm the readings, and finally one of them said,
"Commander, whatever it is, it's big enough and dense enough that it's throwing off our readings, and it's too deep in the gray for anything more sensitive to get a bead on it."
"Fine. Then primal weapons? Give me firing solutions on that thing ASAP! And was it reduced to scrap before it gets within a kilometer of this installation?"
Barbossa shouted. The panic and uncertainty bled away under the firm orders, and Controller Barbossa leaned back in his command chair and massaged his head. What the fuck had those damned trenchies come up with this time? What kind of monster could travel the gray without falling apart? As he had that thought, another one occurred to him that chilled him to his marrow just as one of the tertiaries spoke up and confirmed his fear.
"Commander, we can only get firing solutions at extreme range. Most of the guns don't even depress far enough to fire into the gray." "Shit! Fire at will!"
Barbossa barked, and a moment later, the heaviest and longest range cannons began to unleash their payload. There was no way to confirm whether or not they hit, though. They were practically firing blind, relying on indistinct radar ghosts while they shot into the thick chemical fog that acted like a second atmosphere layer for Zaun. If they did land a hit, it would be glancing, and even that much would be sheer luck.
"They're passing outside of our targeting envelope, sir!"
Another of the tertiaries, Glenn, he thought was his name, said in a panic.
And sir, it's getting faster!"
"What?" Stalker breathed as he stood up and moved over to the radar to lean over it. The readouts were ticking away, reporting the changing distance with each arthritic tick of the autostylus that sketched out the truth of what the tertiary had told him.
"Gods and aspects," Stalker muttered. "It's going to ram us."
Jace slammed a fist onto the table.
"Are you insane?"
"Insane, yeah, why?"
Jinx said over him, grinning wide.
"You're going to ram the Sun Gate."
He gestured at the image on the holographic display.
"How do you expect to survive? How are any of us expected to survive? I can't believe I agreed to this."
Turning to Victor, Jinx made a gesture, and the machine herald nodded calmly.
"You underestimate the durability of my Leviathan," he said. "Since the beginning of the war, I have been upgrading it with the expectation that in the event of an invasion into Zaun itself, the Leviathan could act as a mobile war platform for our leadership. For the past several months, I have melded my own genius with the best siege smiths in Noxus, and I assure you that we will more than survive the impact."
Jinx nodded, relieved that Victor could explain it in a way that the stupid, pilty counselor could actually get. At least he'd stopped arguing.
"It won't be enough to breach the gate, though," Heimerdinger said flatly. "But I assume that someone of your expertise in controlled demolitions must already be aware of that."
Yeah,
Jinx said, caught off guard by the near compliment.
"That's where Ferris comes in," Echo said, nodding down to the older woman.
Everyone paused and looked up at him, and Echo seemed confused as he looked around at them, meeting their surprised expressions with concern. General Naradi chuckled as Lux said what they were all thinking.
"Ferris?"
Jinx put up a hand.
"I don't want to know,"
she said, then added, "But yeah, that's where Ferris comes in, or more accurately."
The gray was split apart as a colossal metal monstrosity broke out from beneath the thick chemical fog like a whale breaching the ocean's surface. If Stalker were to compare it simultaneously to a mollusk, a stampeding steer, and one of those many tentacled images of the Buru Kraken, it wouldn't be disloyal to the overall impression of the beast. It had a great, wedge-shaped head like the prow of a battlecruiser built for ramming, a slick, layered metal shell making up most of its back and body, and from beneath that shell came legions of twisting metal tendrils. Stalker had a brief instant of clarity right before the thing made impact, and thought that it looked very much like the snout of a Noxian dreadnought before the whole thing slammed into the sun gate. The primary gate shattered, opening the way into the artificial passage that was fully 500 meters long and 200 across. It was intended to allow even the largest airships to pass through it unimpeded. Two could even move abreast if the need were there. Even that would be a tight fit for this horror, though.
"What the hell is that?"
Stalker bellowed as dozens of long mechanical tendrils rose up and over the edge of the sun gate to anchor itself to the great golden wall. Several of those tendrils were bashing apart the trench-side guns. The ones closer to the rampart were tearing the emplacements clean off the top of the gate and throwing them into the ocean. It was doing all of that damage with complete impunity because none of the Sun Gate's weapons were designed to shoot something that big and that close that came in that low. They were meant to counter infantry, or at most some lightly armored vehicles. Maybe some heavy armor in a pinch, but that was it. The gray was supposed to be impenetrable. It was supposed to be completely inimical to life, but then this thing wasn't alive, was it? Still, anything metal was supposed to degrade within hours, if not minutes, on contact with the fog, and yet somehow this metal thing had not only managed to survive, but launch an attack.
"Critical damage to guns 3 through 14! Glenn shouted back. "Guns 6, 9, 10, and 13 have been ripped from their moorings. The flat guns and control blisters are being raked clean off the wall, sir. We've got a breach at least 60 meters across in the primary gate. That's too close for any of our big guns to hit it. Alert the clan!" Stalker snapped. "We're sitting Krugs right now. We need aerial reinforcements."
No contact, sir,"
the comms officer Elia said in a panic.
"Something is jamming our transmissions."
Stalker slumped in his command throne and carded his fingers through his hair, knocking his cap askew as he stared at the bevy of flashing red alerts barking at him from all directions. This was insane. There was no other word for it. This was completely insane. What were they even trying to do? The Sun Gate was a monolithic edifice, and even with the damage they were doing to it, it wasn't going to fall. The central guns were inoperable, the gate had a hole in it, and a dozen trench-side control blisters had been sheared off, but for what?
"Commander, we're getting minor pressure alerts from the wall, hundreds of them,"
Glenn said, looking back at him in confusion.
"Minor pressure? Private Elia!"
Stalker turns to the comms officer.
"Are there any external feeds still active on the trench side of the gate?"
Yes,
Elia said shakily.
"Bring it up on the main viewport."
Turning, he watched as the main screen crackled with static, then flickered into a washed-out shade of blue that showed the Leviathan in all of its terrible, mangled glory. It was a monstrous thing, like a mobile fortress, and the Noxian embellishments were as obvious as the Zonite's travesty of progress. It was a nightmare machine of pure destruction, easily the size of a naval cruiser, save that it could somehow fly. More than that, though, it wasn't alone. Hatches opened all over its body and figures were pouring out, soldiers with dead, pallid skin and crimson eyes clad in the livery of a Noxian war host that Barbossa recognized as the Grey Legion. They were the dead brought back to a vile semblance of life and motion, all at the will of their soulless mistress, General Naradi. If there were any two factions that deserved each other, Stalker Barbossa supposed it would be Noxus and Zaun.
"Are they trying to breach the wall through the damaged sections?"
Stalker leaned in, squinting and cursing his weakened eyesight.
No, sir. They're each carrying something. Look!"
Elia manipulated a knob at her console, and it zoomed into one of the hatches just as one of those undead things crawled out. It was clutching something wide, circular, and heavy-looking in one hand, with a thick, pneumatic climbing python in the other. The latter was designed to discharge on impact, punching itself into rock and mooring itself, and was mostly used by miners or surveyors descending through vertical shafts. But the former object, something about it tickled a memory in the back of Stalker's mind, a wide circular plate with some kind of blocky mechanism on the...
Aspects preserve me,
Stalker whispered as he dragged a hand down his beard.
Are those tunnel crack charges?
Lux couldn't deny a certain amount of base gratification at the looks of horror on the Piltovens' faces. Even Vi looked dumbstruck at what her sister had just casually proposed. Lux thought it was brilliant, though. The Grey Legion made regular use of the undead as sacrificial pawns, often strapping them with explosives or using them as shock troops to execute otherwise impossible line-breaking maneuvers. This was just the next logical step in their combat evolution. Of course, Lux said, taking over from Jinx, the tunnel crack itself won't be enough to bring the wall down, but during the assault on the Eastern Sungate, Jinx discovered something that changes the whole equation. Jinx nodded soberly.
Yeah, Sarah did this thing where she sang along with the tunnel crack. She made it stronger, hit harder, and crack deeper.
But that was with magic, Caitlin said cautiously.
And what is magic but arcane?
Victor countered, setting his hands on the display and leaning in.
With Miss Glask's help and no small amount of funding and materials from Baron Glask.
He turned and gave an acknowledging nod to the now monstrous Chem Baron, who nodded back.
I devised a new weapon, which is even now wired into my Leviathan. It can amplify sonic effects by multiple orders of magnitude if need be, causing them to reverberate and trigger a widespread cascade of destruction.
Chase looked sick to his stomach as he took a step back from the display and fixed his one-time partner with an accusatory glare. You've been working on that for a while, I assume, right?
Naturally.
Then, since all of this was the result of a drastic change of plans, I have to ask, what was its original target? That drew the attention of the Piltovens side, but before Victor could answer, Renata put up a hand.
Irrelevant,
she said, her mangled mechanical voice cutting through the tension.
Whatever we did or did not intend to use it for would have been as justified as anything else. Or have you forgotten Piltover's atrocities already? Your golden ideals are not but tarnished bronze, Counselor, so do not act as if you are better than us. The only metric by which you exceed us is in the scale of your self-delusion.
Enough, Renata, Lux said sharply. We're allies here. Maybe only of convenience, but we are allies.
For now,
Renata replied. Yes! For now, Lux agreed. Surprisingly, Heimerdinger didn't jump to defend the ideals of progress the way his one-time student had. It seemed that whatever hope the old man had still held in Piltover was gone, and she could appreciate the magnitude of that weight. Instead, he simply stroked his mustache thoughtfully before saying, I suppose Zonites are the ones who built most of Piltover's infrastructure. It's only right they decide when to tear it down. Professor! Chase turned to look down at him in shock, but Heimerdinger held up a hand for silence before looking back up at Lux. You were saying? Thank you, Professor. Lux gave him a congenial nod, which he answered with one of his own. Then she turned back to the table and relished the way half the table blanched as she showed her true smile. Once the tunnel crack charges are placed, we set them all off at once, and that's when we activate our weapon. The Shatter Knight Protocol. The Grey Legion had thrown themselves at the wall, scuttling over it like cockroaches across a flophouse wall, attaching tunnel crack charges all across the face of the Sungate. Some even scaled the tendrils, getting up onto the upper rampart, crossing it, and then throwing themselves off the other side to plant charges on the opposite seaside face of the gate. Barbossa had tried to rally the internal security, but the cold, hard fact was that the gate had never been built to repel this kind of attack. The best they could do was get up onto the rampart and try to shoot down at the legionnaires that were planting the charges, but not only would most of them already be done by the time the cadre got there, but the tendrils would also just sweep them clean off the gate. He'd given the order anyway, and to their credit, most of the cadre obeyed. Maybe they were just as frustrated with this method of attack as he was, and willing to risk death just to get a shot in. Dust fell in sifting waves from the ceiling as the metal tendrils gripping the ramparts thrashed, lashing out at the cadre soldiers as they took pot shots at the legionnaires trying to mine the outside of the Sungate. That, at least, was something like a plan.
He'd seen the effects of tunnel crack on natural stone, and it was no joke. So he had no idea what the sheer number of charges being planted on the gate's walls would do to the structure. So he gave the order to have all hands brace themselves and to engage all of the protocols for infrastructural collapse.
"Use anything and everything," he shouted. "I want ceilings and walls propped up with support bars, struts, and the goddamn mess hall tables if that's what it takes."
"Yes, sir!"
the control crew shouted as one. The gate would not fall, it couldn't. Tunnel crack wasn't made to breach architecturally sound structures. It was made to take advantage of flaws in natural stone. It would cause damage, sure, but there was no way the gate would fall. Not even that amount of mining charges could knock over an entire sun gate.
"Sir!" Glenn shouted. "Something is happening with the machine outside!
Gravidel, bring it on screen!"
Stalker shouted. Elia flicked a switch, and that washed-out view of the fog leviathan came back into focus. Stalker scowled as a half-dozen yawning ports opened on each of the metal beast's flanks. And from those black depths, a grotesquely barbed pylon emerged. Pulses of hex technical energy arced between them, and the hairs on the back of his neck and all down his arm suddenly stood on end as a single mournful note keened through the air. Then the tunnel crack charges went off, and it was like 1,000 banshees began screaming in his ears. Controller Primary Stalker Barbossa collapsed onto the ground, his whole world rendered down into a static white shriek of agony as every piece of glass and crystal in the room, every window, every porthole, every control screen shattered. A moment after that, the primary control room itself broke clean in half along with them, along with the very sun gate itself. From the bridge of the Leviathan, Jinx threw her arms wide as great fissures opened like gaping wounds in the flesh of the western sun gate. She cackled as she carded her fingers through her hair, laughing out loud as the tendrils of Victor's great fog beast rocked and heaved, dislodging great cyclopean masses of stone. Below them, the associated sea gates and docks fell to ruin as an apocalyptic avalanche fell on them. Hundreds of ships in port were caught in the churning waters and dragged to the depths. Airships moored to the outer sun gate followed their moorings down to terra firma to crash and explode against the cliffside. And if that weren't bad enough, the once-contained fog bank of the Grey was unleashed from the depths of Zaun to roll across the Conqueror's Bay in a tidal surge of chemical death.
"Let's ride that wave!"
Jinx howled. And Victor released a buzzing mechanical roar from his helmeted voice coder. The Leviathan answered his call, withdrawing the Shatternight pylons and pushing itself through the brutalized remains of the western sun gate. Victor's beast lived and died by breathing the Grey, so it wouldn't last long outside of the trenches, but with a century's worth of chemical pollution now billowing out from the depths of the chasms towards Stillwater, it would last long enough to get them there and hopefully back. It would at least last long enough to carry all their vengeance right to Camille Ferros' door. And in the end, that's what Jinx needed.
"Now that,"
Jinx said as she turned back to face the horrified Piltovens on the bridge,
"was a roar."
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.